Hello and thanks for listening to the Active Outdoors podcast. I'm John Davidson. In this episode, I've been speaking to a map maker in Nairn, Steve Smurthwaite, who has been making orienteering maps for years and moved on to making bikes primarily for mountain biking, but they're also useful for walking, running and any other form of cycling really around the area. He's just got back into making a couple of new maps recently, so I went down to Martin to meet him. We had a little ride out to the Findhorn.
Yeah, so we're, what morning is it? Sunday morning. Can't tell because I've not slept that much. I'm with Steve Smurthwaite, who's a map maker based in Nairn. And we're about to head off, so yeah. Where are we going to head to, Steve?
Well, we've parked in Tamartin, and we're going to pick up some little tracks that take us basically over towards the distillery, and then we're going to take the Sustrans Route 7, that parallels the A9 for about a kilometre, and then cut across the A9 and take a minor road up to Ruthven, and then another small track that leads up or downstream down into a gorge on the River Findhorn.
Great, good stuff. And we'll head down there, and hopefully it'll be still nice and dry, and the sun will be out, and we can have a bit of a chat about your map making over the years and this new edition you've brought out as well.
Okay, thank you. Great, let's go.
Yeah.
There are sort of three main areas. There's Deeside, Straths Bay and Perthshire.
Yeah.
And the guys are still selling the maps, and they want the map as a something to be able to sort of hand to their customers and say, look, you know, this is a great area to go and ride and provides lots of information. So I was sort of reluctant to give it up, but I was thinking I would.
Yeah.
And then we discovered this ability to print large format on a laser printer and print small numbers. That's the main thing, because in the past, you know, litho printing, you'd have needed to make it viable, you'd have 2,000 copies of something. Well, 500 copies would cost the same as 2,000 copies.
Yeah,
you know, the price would be the same. So you'd have these large print runs, and of course these don't really warrant large print runs. I'm not selling that many, and also you want to be able to change it. You know, you want to be able to print 100 maps and get a little bit of feedback before you print the next 100 maps, and then do the odd change. For example, today I'll probably put potential locked gate on there.
So
we had a locked gate just today, and hopefully that locked gate will have gone. But because I think providing that sort of information, locked gates, is essential. Now, these are a couple here.
There's a few marks on there.
And as I say, some by the main roads, which they're never going to unlock because of the risk of the sheep getting out onto the main road.
But. Yeah. So this is a kind of latest map, the West Murray, Nairn and Darver, so it's an area you know pretty well, but you're saying you've discovered some new bits.
I did, quite a lot of this area here, the Berry Burn Wind Farm. I'd never been up into Berry Burn, which is, you cycled the Darver Way, I think. You said you'd done the Darver Way, and you see the wind farm up there, the Berry Burn Wind Farm.
Yeah.
And I'd never been up there, so I picked a nice day actually it was January, and it was very icy, so, but not ice, you know, I was obviously quite careful, but there was ice, the puddles were still frozen, which was quite handy because it got to boggy bits, you could just go straight across the top of them, but the tracks themselves, the track up to the wind farm itself was not icy, just where there were, I think what happened, there was a thaw going on, but so the tracks were not slippery, and I managed to cycle all the way around into the wind farm here, and then cut across this, which is muddy and wet. But actually, when I did it, because it was, the ground was quite compact, it was still frozen, so it was quite a good cycle across there. Yeah. But then discovered a route all the way through to Dallas and the Dallas Road, which, for example, if you go to Romac, there's a route. There isn't a route through there, and in fact that. This was my survey map.
Oh yeah,
when I thought there was a route through, so I was planning to go through, this is my survey version, but on your version, obviously I've just put blocked by gorse, so basically, you know, attempted to come through here and it's just completely overgrown.
So you can see those tracks.
I was trying to find routes through and eventually found one through the Lone Road, but this this gate was locked. They say they've unlocked it, so I put a little note, please.
Report if you find it locked.
Yeah.
That's all quite, well, very useful information if you're kind of like us going out exploring places and trying to find ways through.
And of course the locals will know that.
But even, you know, ourselves being fairly local to some of these areas,
well, you can't know everything.
That's true, yes.
But I think that, you know, people like the, some of the local forest cyclists will do these routes and will get a feel for it. But then, you know, that there's opportunities for other people to come and visit, come from far and wide, or even on holiday, and link sort of routes together across Dava there, and know that they can get across because, you know, it's been explored, and they're not going to hit that, you know, they're not going to take that route because of the gorse, for example.
You obviously kind of enjoy these off-road routes more than you know, trail sets and things are quite popular now.
Yeah, I've been to them. I do go there. I was at Glenlivet last year and cycled all around Glenlivet. Have you been to Glenlivet?
Yeah, I went in its first year of opening. I've not been back for a while.
Okay, yeah. And they've changed. There's a few extra bits and pieces there now. And but and they're doing a great job. And there's a cafe there and such like. And then and that and they're very popular. Have you been down to the any others? I mean, what about the ones?
I've done Glen Tress once or twice.
Oh yes,
like that. I tend to do this sort of thing more. You know, I try and get a route from A to B and find a way through and just explore.
Yeah, I think I enjoy that much. I enjoy that much more. I do enjoy a day bashing around a sort of single track sort of area. But I mean, for example, Golspie. Have you ever been to the the Wildcat trials at Golspie? Trails at Golspie.
I find some of them a bit extreme.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. And I love doing it. And but I think I've reached the age where I go, nah, I don't really want to go down that track anymore because there's a risk of, you know, if you come off and you damage your hip, you know, you're going to go, well, actually, that might be it. I might not cycle again. So I tend to be a bit careful.
Yeah, I did manage to go over the handlebars at Lagan once when I was by myself.
Okay.
That put me off a little bit.
Yeah.
And that was avoiding the big slab as well.
Oh, right. yes. The chicken runs still come off. You take a chicken run and still come off.
this kind of thing, just seeing more of the island, really.
Yes, exploring. So. Exploring unknown glens and areas like this. Yeah. Stunning, isn't it? Incredible.
I find this, you know, a series of books that did a similar thing. Was it Peter Koch Osborne? He wrote a series of books and they had sketches of all the kind of basically the rights of way through the highlands.
Okay, yes,
and
yes.
They were really useful because you kind of knew what to expect, but it was still quite new to you.
Yes, yes.
And this is your maps are kind of similar in that way.
Yes.
It gives you a clue, oh, I can get through that way or I can't get through that way.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's what I hope they do. It's, you know, it's to provide people. It's to enhance the experience, as a friend of mine once said. Basically, you come into an area, you want to do a cycle ride, and you go, well, can I do it? And you might spend the whole time worrying that when you get to the far end, you're not going to get down that track. So if you know that on the map it says you're going to get around, there's a very good chance, unless something radical has changed in the last 6 months and nobody's reported that to me, because I would have changed the map and I put it up on a Facebook page that, you know, don't go this way at the moment, there's trees down or something like that, then that, you know, you can go around fairly relaxed knowing that you're going to complete this loop. And that helps the experience, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. What got you started doing the maps, and when did you first kind of do a map?
The cycle maps, it was last year was the 20th anniversary actually of the very first I wrote a little invoice for David Keegan because I thought I'm going to sell a map, and I went into Bothy Bikes in Aviemore, and I said I basically had this idea and I've made a map, would you be are you interested in it? And so it's that's 21 years ago now. And the years before that, I'd been thinking about the fact that I'd cycle with my daughters around Loch Morlach. And on the way around, exactly as we've just been discussing, I was unsure whether we were going to get three quarters of the way around and not make that last little bit, which is the bit on the west side which is a little bit rougher than the whole of the rest of it.
Yeah.
And the whole of the way round, I was worrying about this, thinking, am I going to make it all the way around? And of course we did, and I got back and I thought, well, that's important information, you know, but somewhere or other, somebody should write that down, or I'll make a map. And hence that was the map. And I produced the map of that first bit of Straths Bay, and took it into David Keegan. David was using Bothy Bikes. He was using an Ordnance Survey map, Fablond, and he said, well, we use this, and was a little bit sort of unsure of, you know, whether my map was going to be of any use. But I showed him it, and he said, well, we'll take 10, and literally that afternoon or the following day, he ordered 30, and I never looked back. I thought, great. And he said, this is fantastic. This is exactly what we need. It tells people what they can do, and we can hand them out, or we can sell them with a bike hire, and people know where they're going then. And so it was that, and that sort of experience and knowledge, you know, knowing that it was providing information for people. And I'd always made orienteering maps, but it was this ability to transfer that skill into mountain biking and impart information for people to know where, you know, that they could cycle in an area. So that's where it started.
Yeah, I was going to say the orienteering my eldest daughter doing quite a bit more orienteering at the minute, so we've noticed your name on quite a few of the maps. Are you still doing the mapping for the oldest?
Yes, I am, yeah. And I make the occasional school map. I'm about to do one in a new school in Elgin that's never been mapped before for the club and for the school. And I just don't do a lot. I tend not to do big new areas, that 2 or 3 square kilometres of hilly forested terrain. I just find that too grueling, I think. A small intricate little area of sand dunes or something like that, a little extension to the Lossy map, something like that, was the one I did last year, where they built the new bridge over at Lossy.
Oh yes,
they built a new bridge across onto the an area of dunes, and I extended the map, the Lossy forest map, along the dunes to that bridge, and things like that I love doing. I think that's great fun, little orienteering maps like that. Really challenging and fun.
There seems to be quite a lot of changes in some of the areas that are mapped, especially the semi-urban areas things develop.
Yes, oh yes. I mean, there's always updating maps and things, little bits and pieces that the club will send me. You know, they put on an event in one of the local areas, and the map was made 5 years ago, and you get an email with Steve, will you just update the map? And the jobs like that are very simple. You just you just take a clear or change a clearing into a forest, or you add an extra track. That might mean a quick visit just to go and walk down the track to make sure you're plotting it right. But simple changes happen all the time on maps, of course. So it's good. It's important to keep them up to date.
And is this all done kind of? You know, is it done by GPS on your phone? How do you kind of track things these days when you're making a map?
Well. Exactly that, GPS on a phone, actually. I didn't used to. I used to be a paper and pen and a little... And then I had a handheld GPS, and I would look at the handheld GPS to see where I was and relate it to the piece of paper. But these days, I've got it around my neck. This, for example, is a program called OCAD, and that's the program that I've been using to draw orienteering maps for 34 years now, 1990. So 34 years, I've seen all the iterations and development of the program, and it's quite hard to see in the light with the screen. But there we are. This is that map, that paper map.
Yeah.
All of it.
All right. Yeah.
On a screen, in this format called OCAD.
Yeah.
And this program is called OCAD Sketch, and basically it allows me to import the map. That will center the map on the GPS position, which is there, and we can zoom in, and that's there. So it's more or less right. I think the GPS thinks we're just the other side of the scale. That's the inaccuracy of the scale of the map, or the inaccuracy of the GPS, but essentially it's more or less and so, for example, that's the track through there, which I thought might join to that track there, but doesn't, so that's hence nothing works. And so what we can do is we can come to here, and then we can take a pen colour, purple say, zoom in, and then black there.
Yeah.
And then we can put the pen sign, and we just put up at a G for gate. And that will remind me that the gate is locked. Now I can then get home, and if I can do it from here, if I've got a signal, I can just close the project. You know, I've got a 4G signal here, that goes off to the cloud.
Yeah.
And then I get home and I open my laptop and I open my program and I download from cloud, and that information is then on my laptop.
I guess there's the wind farms, the new wind farm tracks are quite a big change from the type of maps that you're doing.
Yeah.
Lots of additions.
yeah. And you know, I don't know, how do you feel about wind farms? What are your thoughts on wind farms?
I'm a bit kind of on the fence about them. I see the need for them, but don't want them everywhere. There's certain places I think there's too many of them.
Yeah, I think we're possibly not all of us, but I'm exactly like that. Yeah, I used to hate them. When I drive across Darver Moor and see this wind farm, I used to look at it and go, oh, you know, they sport the landscape, industrialised the landscape. You know, these landscapes have been like this for, you know, hundreds of years since they felled the trees and so thousands.
People who live nearby, it's such a massive change.
Yes.
Where they live, really.
Yes.
A big impact on people.
So. But yeah, I understand that the need for them. And actually, I've sort of grown to accept them because they provide fantastic areas for recreation. You know, the cycling tracks around them are absolutely terrific, and they take you up onto these moorlands around here. You know, up onto, there was one literally just over the back there that you would never have been able to get to. And Tom the Clark just over the hill here, and more, and well, Moy's just up this the other glen, just here, isn't it? Yeah. And I've done some fantastic memories and experiences of cycling around these wind farms now, with amazing views, that I wouldn't have been able to do.
Yeah.
So that. Sort of as one of the reasons I accept. The other one, I think, is the financial benefits to the local communities. And I mean, I don't understand enough about it, and maybe, you know, the communities aren't getting a lot out of it, but essentially there are grants. Local communities get a small proportion of sums of money that they're able to put into good causes. The Orienteering Club in Murray, Moravian, got a good grant last year from the Berry Burn Wind Farm. And managed to update 4 or 5 of the maps that are in and around Forres, which is a fantastic benefit to the local community, or to the club and the local community. So yeah, we have to live with them, but there's no point going and hating them for the rest of your life, is it?
That's it. And we were chatting on the way over here about gravel biking a little bit, and gravel bikers certainly enjoy mixing the kind of wind farm tracks with
a
bit of road cycling.
Yeah, definitely.
Some new routes, so.
Yeah, yeah. Although there are some really hardy gravel bikers that will go on anything, I've discovered. You know, even the tracks I look at sometimes, there's a track along the edge of the Findhorn from Logie. Have you been to Logie Steading?
Yeah.
And there's a track that leads along the edge of the Findhorn from Logie in all directions. I mean, it's just a wee track further downstream from here, just a wee track that runs along some cliffs and such like. And I've been down there once on my bike and on my electric, well, years ago, and I know it because I've walked and run there, but, you know, on my electric mountain bike, I had a wander down there. And I just thought, well, this is all a bit dangerous and a bit, whoa, and I, you know, pushed quite a lot. And then I watched a YouTube video of a gravel biker, and he was just so skillful and went bombing through this area. And he did occasionally have to get off, and he did fall, slip a couple of times. Fortunately, he didn't fall over the cliffs. But I mean, so, you know, there are some pretty hardy gravel bikers that will go in anything that a mountain bike will go in, really. So,
it's quite wild. I see the previous map, I think I'm right in saying Badenoch and Strathspey was the one you did before this.
Yeah, that was that was the first one. Yes, yeah, yeah, that was
the
last.
New one, the new ones.
Yeah.
Because I went up there with my young lad on the where did we go? I wrote about this one as well. We were out on the new tracks on the Trumie to Feshi.
Oh yes.
So, and we picked a grim day, to be honest.
Oh, what shame!
He was on the back of the tag-along.
Oh right.
It was just a bit too little to go that sort of distance, but we had a day where the girls were off somewhere else. So we'll go for a bike ride in the Cairngorms.
Yeah.
So I can pull him for 20 miles, that's fine.
Yeah.
So we did this loop, but it started raining really heavily and the track was just chucking mud into his face.
Oh, no. Was it cold?
It was cold. Yeah, it was cold rain.
So. Oh gosh, he won't remember that night. Gosh.
Well, it gave him a memorable experience.
Yeah.
He still talks about it, but
okay.
It's not totally put him off by
him. Oh, good. Yeah, that's the main thing.
But we certainly had
it's got to be enjoyable. Yeah. Yeah, again, this is these tracks. This we're sort of looking at the map south of of Loch Inch, yeah, Kincraigor, and down Glen Fish and Glen Tromey. Yeah. Well, the first area they extended here was in the hills above the Pony Bridge, to the west of the Pony Bridge, sort of almost opposite Skagooey, isn't it? Straight opposite Skagooey. And that was a track that they put in first, in there. And again, I didn't know that was happening, and I got a call from, actually it was David Keegan again this time, saying, Steve, look, you know, they put these new tracks in, there's only chance you go down. So, and I did my first electric mountain bike experience of that about 4 years ago, when I borrowed a bike from David and did that ride, and went, wow, yeah, this is fantastic, yes. And I did a long, long ride, out 3 or 4 hours or whatever, used up nearly all of the battery, experienced my first range anxiety, which we're all going to learn about when we have electric cars, and you can learn about it very quickly from an electric mountain bike if you overextend your day's rides. So we put in that in first, and I was basically looking at, you know, knowing that this loop round the bottom was being done, so I waited till it was what I thought complete, and went and did it. And actually, it wasn't quite complete. There's a bridge here, and the bridge was in place. It was there, but not in place. It was like by the side of the track with a crane, and I think it went in the following week. So I had to go through a ford right down at the most southerly point of that sort of Glen Tromey, Glen Fishy loop. But again, what a fantastic area for recreation that is.
Yeah.
And again, people will argue that we shouldn't be building these tracks through the hills, but when somebody does and builds a track like that, minimum access, little gravel road. Oh gosh, does it make a difference to our ability to have fun?
I was going
to
say, the last time I was up that way before I went and did that new track was going through the mini gig, and I knew you could get to Tromey, and came off the north side of the burn there, the Alperan.
Oh yes.
And you come through this bit, and it used to just be wild. So there was no path or anything.
Right.
You just kind of find your way across
above
the gorge there,
yes,
and then you're into the hills.
There's a bog all the way. Yes, yes. There was a link through here, I think, as well. A little track, wasn't there?
Yes. It's so different coming up this. There's a bit of forestry there. You come through
this
hilly, and
then
you kind of... Yeah.
It's a bit hilly
everywhere, isn't it?
Well, that's true, yeah. Well, that Glen Tromey loop is definitely a classic. Cameron McNeish did it about a year ago, and maybe just about the time, just soon after it opened, about the time I cycled it and put the map together. He's made a YouTube video of that loop, and it's about 20 minutes, and it's a lovely little. Yeah. And he's obviously very professional with his YouTubing, and he's got a really good Glen Tromey, Glen Fishy YouTube video of that route as well.
Well, talk a bit about the electric mountain bike while we're talking about that. It's kind of open lots of things up.
Well, I think for me, I had a few little sort of health issues, basically. I mean, heart issues, and I struggle to run these days. And I was always a good runner, and so I struggle to run. I can get round, and I manage it really well. And the consultants and the treatment has been fantastic. And I'm healthy, and hopefully I'm going to live another 20 odd, 20, 30 years and keep going. But it did restrict me in my exercise and my outdoor activities. Running, I just about plod, and I struggle because my heart rate tends to sort of race away and go too fast. So I tried this electric mountain bike, and essentially since I bought it, it's just transformed my life. I mean, it's just allowed me to go into all the things that I was doing 20 years ago. There can be a little bit of range anxiety because you're just having so much fun. You just want to go out all day.
Yeah.
You don't get particularly tired. So it's extremely good exercise. You're out in the fresh air, and the moment you think you might start getting tired because there's a big hill in the way, you just put a little bit of extra, boost on the motor, and it takes you up the hill, and you're going up the hills almost as fast as you're coming down them. And so they are just absolutely phenomenal. They're just unbelievable. And you can go out all day. And as I say, because you want to stay out all day, I often take an extra battery with me, and they're quite heavy. But again, does that matter? You just, just carry it in a little rucksack on your back. It's not as if the motor's taking you around and carrying you around anyway, so it's not as if it really makes a difference carrying that extra little bit of weight. So, yeah, great fun.
Excellent. So that's kind of really important as well, when people have got health problems, or just when they're getting a bit older and can't go as well.
Yeah.
If you're used to a life of activity, that's
that can be quite challenging mentally if you suddenly can't do those things.
Very much so, absolutely, yeah, definitely, yeah. And I was able to sort of cycle around town and, you know, do little rides, and the sudden realization that I could get back to doing 3 or 4 hour mountain bike, or more, you know, long, as long as I liked, all day long, as long as, you know, all day long, just keep going and enjoying these things. You know, I'd struggle to get up a Munro, but I could cycle for sort of 4 hours through, 5 hours through the hills. Is a fantastic feeling. So we're very, very fortunate. The technology has arrived just in time.
Yeah.
Absolutely just in time. You know, it's what, 3 or 4 years we've had these high quality electric mountain bikes, and actually they're getting better and better. You know, one of the issues, my one is a 23 kilo monster. You know, and the battery alone weighs about 2.5 kilos or something. So they're quite heavy. But of course, that doesn't matter, because the motor's doing all the work. Yeah. So it doesn't matter that it's heavy. It's heavy if you get to a gate. That's an issue. It can be a bit tricky getting it over gates. But the bike's getting lighter and lighter. So, you know, I think they're down to 15, 16 kilos on some electric mountain bikes now. So
I guess the battery technology is moving on.
As well, right? Yeah. So, and the motors are getting better and so on, yeah. There's always the slight worry that when you go through a stream or a ford, and the engine gets submerged, and that happens quite a lot, especially in the hills around here. There's lots of fords in the hills around Darver and around Findhorn, but I've never had an issue. I've just, you know, you just go straight through the stream and come out the other side, and back just keeps going. Yeah, so. It's always been Colbin. It's always been Colbin, I think, and you know, cycling into Colbin or walking into Colbin, just Well Hill, I think. And maybe that should no longer be my favourite spot, because it used to be very quiet and remote, and the forest was very different 30 or 40 years ago, and it's all, you know, it's all changed so much. There's big car parks there, and it's a bit thicker. But I suppose just Colbin as a place to go and visit is just so magical to me. And had so many memories even before I moved to the Highlands in the 80s. You know, I'd been into Colbin in the 1970s and just saw one magical place. So, yeah, so maybe Colbin I like. And the beat, you know, you get through to the far end of Colbin, you've got the view of Findhorn Bay and of Findhorn, and just Colbin. And I can cycle all the way through Colbin, all the way down to my home in Nairn as well, which, yeah, you know, is I first did about 40 years ago, and when there were huge big fences in the way, and it was all a bit of a, not sure I can do this, you know, a bit of an adventure. But you know, I think I could get round Colbin, and these days I just know it so well, and it's just so lovely. What about you?
It's difficult. I like the hills. I like getting up into the hills.
Yes.
High points, but I also really enjoy those kind of really wild glen routes, like through Glen Tilt, like we were talking about there.
Yes.
The top of Glen Tilt, where you kind of go beyond the estate tracks and beyond the lodge.
Yes.
Get to the, I can't remember the name of the ruined lodge you get to up there. Over the Geldy.
Yes.
And places like that are just stunning. They're just so far away from normal life.
Yes. Up to the suspension bridge in Glen Tilt, things like places like that. Magical, aren't they? Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. So actually, there are so many. I should probably say no, but I did say Colbin instantly, didn't I?
Yeah.
Because it always has been, I suppose. Yeah.
It's a unique sort of place, Colbin.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. And it's not hills. It's my orienteering sort of background, I think, that makes Colbin so special, because it's just vast area of complicated sand dunes, and I just picture this lovely map of all the intricate contours on it. It's just such a beautiful, beautiful map with all the contour detail on it.
So you do need to be able to navigate there as well, even the number of junctions at the forest.
Yes, you do. Yes. My there's a story there. My wife went off with a friend from walking a dog once, and I was doing a ride or something, and let's meet you back in the car park in an hour and a half. So, you know, the hour or whatever it was came up and went, was it back in the car park? No wife. And they went completely the wrong way. And it's very easy to do. And I've also, another story, I've met somebody at the Nairn end of Colbin, come out onto the forest, onto the foreshore there. And I've sort of said, oh, hello, how are you doing? We know, are you okay? Yes, we're just looking for the way back to Forres. And they could see what they thought was Forres, which of course was Nairn. So I said, oh. anyway, the long and the short of it was they wanted to go back. And I said, you know, if you go back, are you sure you're going to be able to find your way back? It's a long, long way, and you are miles from where you think you are. If you head to Nairn, which is just there, and you'll be there within half an hour or so, you can get a bus back to Forres. But I'm assuming they wanted to find their car back at Well Hill as well, or whatever. But anyway, I never did find out what happened to them, but it was quite a shock. So, yeah, it's the sort of place to get very lost in as well.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What's next for you in terms of mapping? Have you got another area in mind?
Well, I'm... My Highland Perthshire maps are still in the format of individual A4 size maps, so I have virtually drawn it all out. It's finding time. I don't like sitting at a computer. I had a lot of opportunity to sit at a computer last year. My wife was in hospital quite a long time, so I sat in hospital with her and spent a lot of time drawing maps on a computer, so that made good use of the time. This year I don't feel as if sitting by a computer is making good use of my time anymore. So that map's going to take a wee while longer, and I'd love to get out more and cycle and such, which is what I'm going to do. As for new areas, well, when I did the Strathspey map and completed it last year, I thought, well, I've always wanted to map around where I live in Nairn, and I literally took the same sized area of, you know, 40 by 40k or whatever it is, for 50 by 50, whatever it is, 40 by 40 kilometers or something like that, and I extended the map on my computer north and said, well, what can I fit in with 40 by 40k, the same scale, same style of map, and it turned out to be the new West Murray, because you couldn't quite get all of East Murray and Nairn and Darver. So I thought, well, that's great, and I knew quite a lot of that, and I knew it would be easy to cycle a bit, so I didn't know, because it was near home, and it took me just about the year to cycle all the bits I didn't know, so that was quite a nice project, and put it all together, and a lot of the tracks I knew, like, you know, Culbin obviously all by heart, and I had all the information anyway from orienteering maps and things. So that was that map. So yes, and then I then actually took that same square, 40 by 40 square, and I shifted it west, and that nicely covers Dingwall and Strathpeffer, which is quite a popular cycling area. It covers obviously Inverness, it covers to the south side of Inverness, which is a hidden gem, really, isn't it? A fantastic area. It links to this map, it links from Strathdairn here with all the wind farms that you get between Tamartin and Strathnairn, basically. I'm not sure, but I think those wind farms link right the way across the hills. I think there's actually a way through all the way. But to actually go and cycle all of that. So how many years have I got left? And how many good cycling years have I got left?
Another person who knows a lot of those ones out of
mine. Oh, right, yeah.
Off mic.
Yes, yeah. Well, actually, that's a good way of doing it, because essentially I can't cycle every single track. And so if I get a little bit of help and, you know, a few GPS tracks, and especially on gravel tracks, which you know are going to be pretty solid, and, you know, there's no short, they're going to just, you know, they're gravel tracks, you know, they're on the map, the way you grade, you know, grade the track, that's just a solid red line. So, you know, it's a solid red line and it links all the way around, and these are the circular bits and that sort of information. But to put the whole thing together and draw it and go and survey the bits and check bits that I want to check to make sure they're absolutely right, it's more than a year's work, I should think. So I might get that done. I mean, I don't know, but I sort of quietly, at the back of my mind, thinks that would be a nice little thing to aim to do. And is there a market for a map like, you know, I don't actually care. The market is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. I'm not doing it for commercial reasons. I obviously sell the map. But yeah, will I make a map of that area? I don't know. I've actually put the base map together. It's there. It's not in a very good condition. It needs an awful lot of work on it. And then I have to start looking at tracks and all the other things that need to be plonked over the top and then grading. So it's a lot of work. I sometimes think, actually, maybe the best way to actually get on with something like that is to get what I've got already and just go and print it. And so, which is more or less what, you know, that's an older version of this. You notice when we went through it, this map of West Murray was the original one that I've got some sketched and notes written on it, and And when we saw that area of the gorse track, I was planning to cycle through there and had to sort of change it on the version you've got, the finished version. So that's possibly a good start, is to get something into a a map that folds, and then I've got something sort of physical to go right.
Yeah,
got to build this. Yeah, yeah.
So people can pick them up. They're available in most of the bike shops, I think, around, are they?
Yeah. Again, it's because I'm not really a big commercial sort of guy. Really, I'm not pushing. I'm not advertising a lot. I'm not pushing it into lots of shops. If they want them, they can have them. But I'd rather sell a reasonable number to a few shops than 10 here and 10 there. You know. So Bothy Bikes in Kingussie. Is one area, a Ride in Bodegarten, and the two bike shops in Ballater as well. So,
and Avimore mentioned as well.
Backcountry Biking in Avimore, he sells a couple of them as well. Yeah, he sells a few, and that's about it. Or on the web, I've got a website and a Facebook page for trail maps, and there's actually a Cairngorms Carousel Facebook page as well, which is just trying to sort of promote that as a sort of Scottish top quality, amazing sort of cycle ride, 4 days around off road around the Cairngorms. I mean, car can't get better than that, can you? In good weather, brilliant.
Sounds great. Thanks very much, Steve.
Great. Yeah. Thanks, John.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Activate Doors podcast. If you made it this far, I hope you enjoyed it. You can follow my blog at johndavidsonoutdoors.com. Steve's maps are available at trailmaps.biz, that's B-I-Z. And you can find his Facebook pages just by searching for Trail Maps or Cairngorms Carousel on there. We'll be back with further episodes in the hopefully not too distant future. So if you keep an eye on my website, you'll see them when they're available on there first. They're also available on the usual podcast platforms.